He's like got that black cloud over his head everywhere he goes. It's like,
man, we know a guy like that. Got to get him all. Got to fill up his wall.
In the heat of the battle, you know, you do kind of, you know, things just start to happen and it can get ugly. So
I see Little Abner just signed.
Little Abner.
You.
What does that make you, Mike?
Grog's brother.
You're out of my pop culture window. Was it in color?
You're listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division of the National Model Railroad Association. The topics and discussions are about the world's greatest hobby, model railroading. Here are your hosts, Thomas Gazier and Ken Zeska. This episode of the Crossing Gate podcast is brought to you by the 100% Momentum Guy. He sets his momentum at 100%. Why? Because he can't set it at 110%. Try to stop his passenger train? No way. Slow down that drag freight? Not a chance. Switch a few cars at the industry? Nope. Stop on an uncoupling magnet? What magnet? You're lucky to stop near any industry. 100% Momentum Guy can be found at clubs, modular setups, and annoying home layouts. 100% Momentum Guy comes with phrases like, "Why won't anyone come back to my operation sessions?" And, "I'm only being prototypical." Yeah, if Gomez Adams was prototypical. So remember, avoid the 100% Momentum Guy. And don't even try to use the emergency stop button. He's disabled it.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Crossing Gate podcast. Today, I'm joined by Ken Borowski.
Hello.
Mike Jordan.
Hello.
David Hamilton.
Hello.
William Sampson.
Hello, everybody.
Ken Zeska.
Good day, folks.
And I'm Thomas Gazier, your referee for today. And our topic is two-person crews while operating a layout. And I'll start this to you, William. What are your opinions on having two people run a train on a layout for operations?
I think the biggest thing ends up coming right down to is the amount of space. If it allows for the ability to have two guys on a crew, and in main part, because I think the advantage is to be able to have somebody that can do paperwork and then the other guy can be a throttle jockey. So that would be a plus side I see in it. I do like the social element of the model railroading and operations, but often at times I think the con can be that two-man crew can stand there chit-chatting with each other and they're not paying attention to what they need to get done and you kind of got to keep moving things along. So I would say the balance of it would just be finding the right type of two-man crew. And I don't know if there's even in a one-man crew scenario, if there's somebody that doesn't want to do any of the switching and they're just gaggling up the whole system, that can obviously cause an issue too. So maybe that individual needs that second hand. So I personally like it. I mean, I don't know about you guys. I mean, is it a space issue? Or I mean, Dave, even in your railroad, you've got a large enough space to kind of work with. Do you have two-man crews?
We've done it from time to time. Like during the last Minrail, I took my Winona section and I made that into a two-man crew, and I told the guys when they started that, you know, why don't you just decide which one of you is going to be the conductor and who's the engineer, and then don't hog it, you know, really share the work. And I think it worked out pretty good. You know, I checked up on them once in a while, and that's exactly what they were doing. One guy was handling the paperwork and calling out the, you know, pull up two cars or come on back, three, two, that'll do, and the whole bit. So it worked out quite effectively. But then again, like you said, that's in a space that's roughly 12 feet by 12 feet. So they're not rubbing against each other. At least they weren't when I was there. You know, now that might have changed afterwards. But so, yeah, we've done that on a couple of my jobs with two guys working with each other. And it works well.
Well, I think part of it, too, has to do with what job they might be doing, and then maybe what type of throttles that you're using too. Because sometimes certain jobs are a little bit more intense. There's a lot more switching involved and stuff. And if somebody's relatively new to that type of an operation, they might feel comfortable having somebody with them, they kind of learn to lay out in a railroad. You know, some guys use the proto throttle too. And if you're by yourself doing a proto throttle and trying to handle paperwork and uncouple cars, and if you're using a radio and things like that, it can be a bit much too. So that extra sets of hands can, you know, obviously help you in that type of situation.
Yeah, I was going to comment, Dave. I think your layout, like you point out, you've got plenty of space. There are a lot of layouts with 30-inch aisles where 24-inch aisles where one-person crews are challenged, let alone two persons, particularly if crews have to pass each other. That's, I think, one of the first considerations. The other consideration is how long the switching area is. Dan Dosa has two crews, but it'd be hard for him to have a two-person crew because you're switching them a 30-inch area, 30-inch long. It's very complicated. There's a lot to do there, but it's pretty hard to stand two people unless the engineer stood well off the layout.
Now, Ken, don't you have an area on your layout where one person can be on almost one side of a wall because the other spur's on the
yes.
other side of the room? So you almost need to have the second person in your crew to do some of the jobs on your layout. Is that correct or not?
You're right. And that's an area that I like to do two-person crews because, as you say, the switching area goes through a wall. So it's very convenient for the engineer to be on one side because he can pretty much see down there. But if the person on the other side, the conductor, is calling out lengths and working the uncoupling tool, that works out real nice. And then when you turn around and do the trailing points the other direction, again, it's comfortable to have a two-person crew. I do like that. Some people don't like two-person crews, though. I think we can get into that later. Mike, you've got a lot of space. Do you ever do two-people crews?
I do. A few times an extra has shown up more than I need, and so then I get the packing district, which is very complicated switching a two-man crew. Ken B, he came up with, if you have a novice operator and you can pair them up with a more seasoned operator, a two-man crew works out really well. Also, if the area that you're switching is challenging in length, it's always nice to have a two-person crew. I operated on one railroad, and the railroad was full of people, and it was kind of noisy. I ended up on a two-man crew, and we did all of our switching using hand signals and never talked to each other during the session. That was a lot of fun. We got into a good rhythm. We could understand our finger singles. And so the two-man crew
really
there
good if you're antisocial.
A lot of
Is that
fun.
One car?
Wait a minute. That cuts down on all that extra chit-chat.
You just have to put up the right fingers and not the other fingers and stuff.
Yeah. That's why I operate my railroad by myself a lot.
William, is this mainly, do you guys think, I'll go to you, William, do you think it's mainly for switching? Because if you had a layout with a longer mainline run, couldn't one person talk to the dispatcher, copy down track warrants, you know, relay information while the other person is committed to operating that train safely? What do you think about that? Like,
yeah, I think a lot of it really comes down to being able to understand what the actual purpose is for the second individual, whether it's paperwork, whether it's communication. I think a lot of times, I mean, Ken B mentioned the proto throttle and having a radio in your hand. Like, you've got all these things going on that it becomes cumbersome and almost overwhelming maybe for some to think through their moves if they've got all of this stuff going on. So then, like you say, Tom, if you're going to be in an application where, you know, maybe the crew is relaying the information, they know the track warrants, they're watching their signals, and they're letting their engineer know, hey, you can move ahead forward. This could help a lot of that space issue for some people that don't maybe have an abundant amount of space, and that engineer may be struggling a little bit if he had to do the paperwork, if he had to do the radio, and he had to run the throttle, where he just has one guy that could be off on the side and isn't in the thick of everything and just says, all right, let's go ahead. We're going to get two cars. And even if that engineer is the one doing the uncoupling and recoupling of the cars, the person doing all that think work could be around the corner or on the other side of the wall or just in an area that they can communicate with their engineer, but not have to be standing hip to hip or shoulder to shoulder. And I know like a lot of guys, Mike, I'm going to flip back to you real quick. At Gary's, I know you use up in St. Paul, you got two guys there. He's got a yard at Arkwood. There are two guys there. And then there's a job called the branch line, which I've ran solo, but it is also nice in some cases to have two guys there. Do you see those pairs at other railroads as beneficial? And if you do, is it in that application of splitting each other up? And I saw Dave nodding too. So either one of you.
Okay. Yes. Yeah. In the St. Paul yard, it really takes two people, one to handle all the paperwork and talk to the dispatcher while the throttle jockey is taking care of moving the cars in the proper locations. And then John O'Brien has the Minot yard, and that takes three people. That's general yard master, kind of controls what tracks are going to be used for what trains. And then there's a two-man crew to handle the paperwork and be a throttle jockey. So there are certain areas and setups on railroads that just require multiple people. In some cases, like I mentioned before, you partner up a seasoned with a amateur, and that makes a good two-man crew.
Well, hold it right there. Just real quick, is that I use Gary's as an example because I know when I see the crews get selected, nobody wants to take St. Paul. And Mike is a great operator because he always jumps on that grenade for everybody and takes the actual St. Paul job. But then they say, who wants to be the engineer with Mike? And either they really like Mike, but all the hands go flying up. Like you get four or five guys that want to run for Mike. What is that? So they don't want to do the paperwork, but they want to run the yard? Or what is that dance? Or you know the dance in St. Paul so well that they all like dancing with you?
In St. Paul, no one likes to do the paperwork. There's an awful lot of switching in that position. So I would say 80% of the people that are operators like switching. So in that case, there's a few places on Gary's Railroad that you can immerse yourself into switching. Most everybody else is on the main running from A to B. So everybody wants to jump on those few switching areas. Bathing regularly helps getting a good person.
Pro tip.
How do you define regularly? Is that monthly, quarterly?
Well, we operate every Friday, so, you know, Thursday bath time.
So, Mike, I liked what you brought up earlier about using the hand signals and stuff. That's kind of like a whole nother level you can take to your operation if somebody's never tried that before, because everybody's always looking for ways to, you know, spice up the operation or do something different or, you know, mix things up a little bit. If you tell everybody, okay, here's the gag for your mouth for the session. Nobody talks. You got to do it all with hand signals. It's kind of a neat concept to try and just see how that goes. Plus, it makes the space a whole lot quieter too.
So. Well, yeah, this is at Gary's on the branch line. One person kind of is tucked into a corner and the other person is in the aisle. Sometimes it's distracting to holler back and forth. We kind of hit on the hand signals and it worked out really well.
I've done that once before when I was a two-person crew with another rail, another guy who works for there. And so I was the switch person. We were just talking with our hands, you know, for about an hour into the session. And all of a sudden we got up to take a sip of drink and everybody else at the opera session was staring at us. what are you guys doing over there? You know, and we're just, you know,
well, that's
giving all these local signs on. And this and that.
But
well, that too, but you know.
But isn't that fun to
it is.
Get in that it is. Rhythm?
It is. That's about the only fun for a two-person crew. If you're going to engage that way in a hand sign instead of a person standing a foot away from me and you're reading off a car card. I think hand signs are important. It would be kind of fun. That might be a good clinic for hand signs used for a layout because you can't throw your hands all the way out to make car counts, but you can use smaller ones. I think that's good. So you guys have brought up, and I'll go to Ken Ziska on this, you guys have brought up pairing up a new person. What about pairing up a veteran person that wants a new job? that wants to try something. You know, we're all veteran operators, and somebody says, hey, Joe Binnish wants you to run their yard. And that's when, you know, all of us veterans go out and get a donut because we know better. But Ken, you know, is that a good reason for a two-person crew, even to get more experience for someone?
I like that idea on so many different levels. If you have somebody that really gets into the role play and you have somebody else that just wants to be nut cruncher, you know, he doesn't want to play the role. He just wants to bang cars around. I think that it would be nice to pair them up with the hopes that the nut cruncher or number cruncher would see the deeper enjoyment you can get out of the operation when you run to the role. I'm going to circle back to your idea again about the hand signals. Is that's a great way to get a couple of veteran operators to say, okay, we want to add this to you. Here's some basics. We'd like you to do this all with only hand signals, nothing else. You can add more if you need to, and then tell us afterwards how it worked. So it's a chance to give another dimension to everybody. I think that's a fun idea. And I would suggest maybe at the modelers meet or the operators retreat, ahead of time when we're talking to people, we say, hey, guys, try these couple of hand signals and just tell us how they work. Ken Browse, you do a lot of different people on your layout. You operate quite a bit. What do you think about that? Do you have veterans that you have out there that you'd like to say, hey, I want you to take a different job this time?
Well, you mentioned a good topic about learning a new job. So you could have been to the same layout 15 times, but let's say you've never worked the yard. And, you know, everybody knows on certain layouts, if you put a new person in the yard, it could bring the whole operation to a standstill because the yard needs to flow. So that's one way of getting people with experience on a new job, even though they could be a veteran operator, but they maybe have never done that particular job before and they want to learn it. So then you pair them up with a guy that knows the yard. So they're working as a team and they're both veteran people, but it just happens to be a job on that layout that this person has never done. So like you said, that's a good way of getting somebody introduced to a new job without bringing the operation to a standstill. If they're too slow or messing something up, things will still flow and they're kind of learning the ropes of the new job.
Well, and one way to think about a two-person job that I think of it a little bit differently. Now, I'm just going to give you an example. On my dad's railroad, we have a union yard. It's a complex area to work. Now, with that said, he's not going to be able to get all the work done. And every yard on the railroad, the three yards that are there, have a trim. And that trim job, it's to be done by the guy in the yard if he's got time, right? Well, a lot of times if you get bogged down and you want to bring in a second guy, I know Ken had the opportunity and he stepped into this role, which became a second hand for the yard guy when he needed help on the other end of the yard. And Ken was in there. He did the work. He moved some cars around. And that then alleviated some of the pressure that Joe might have been feeling at first and starting in union. Well, once you've done that, that person doesn't have to stay there. Let's say Ken finished the trim and now he moves on to a different job. He doesn't have to stay as that two-man crew paired up with Joe. He grabs a throttle and does something else. So thinking about yourself in a position that it doesn't have to be two guys are in union, that's the way it's going to be. Okay, maybe it's one guy in union, and then if he needs a floater, one of the road guys can roll over there and help him out. That's just an area you can do it. You can do it up in Wilmer. You could do it in Lindale. If the guy needed a hand, you've got that second hand. So almost kind of think about two-man not always having to be two guys next to each other, but maybe just pulling somebody in to be able to help you if you are struggling a little bit.
I like that. That's good.
Yeah, that's an innovative concept. If you had somebody who knew everything, I kind of like that too, because then it reduces the hey Toms, hey Kens, you know, hey, my, you know, if you have another train master.
Dave Hamilton, do you have yards that always get run by the same person and you would like to have that person shadowed, kind of like over at Gary's creating a shadow or two for Mike so they learn that job? But what about your layout? Do you have guys that do it better?
Yeah, it's funny you would mention that. Last night at our Tuesday night roundhouse session, one of the guys decided he wanted to try being the yard master. I have to admire what he did, because deceiving yard, because it's only got five tracks in it, you know, with two AD tracks and a main track, there's an awful lot of cars that go through there. He did his best, but it did bog down the railroad. I helped him a few times, you know, just to get him rolling. It was nice to see somebody else step up to the job, because usually it is the same, you know, like two guys that'll operate it. I think I'd even let him try doing it again. I might take it a step further and get him a second operator so he could, you know, so that the new guy could do the paperwork in this case and have somebody else banging the cars around for him, you know, just because it would have sped things up. We ended up only running two of the five trains that normally run through the yard just because he was new at it. I didn't want to stop him. You know, I wasn't about to say, let's get somebody else in here. You know, we made it through the whole, what counted, right. We made it through a whole session, what counted as a session. And I think he learned a lot, and I think he'll volunteer to do it again, or I should say bid for it again. So.
You don't want to be the baseball manager, walk out there and the throttle and call for the lefty. His
give him the hook.
Thanks a lot, kid.
Bring out the helmet car. The helmet car coming in.
Give him
the hook. He never threw anything across the basement. He didn't start crying at any point. You know, he wasn't sweating profusely. Yeah. It just wasn't moving.
Well, what kind of sessions are you running over there?
I don't know. It was just a real quirk, an anomaly session.
That's fun. No, I think that's good. I think it's good when you have a layout that people want to do that.
Well, like we've been talking about layout operations, but there's other jobs too, like a dispatcher or maybe a guy that's writing, you know, forms and stuff. You know, those are all jobs that people tend to stay away from whenever you say, okay, we need to fill these spots, and everybody takes a step back, you know, and one guy that's not paying attention standing there, hey, guess what? You're the dispatcher for this one. It's like, oh no. So those are jobs too, that you kind of usually want to get a second person in there kind of so that they can learn. I mean, not that they're difficult, but people are kind of very intimidated by some of them just because they don't really know what the person does. But if they sit there, like at the last op session I was hosting, Tom was there and he was showing Dan Dosa how to dispatcher's job, which was good. And about halfway through, Dan felt comfortable. And then Tom went down and started running trains. So it was just like William said, you don't need to have the second guy there for the whole time. But at some points, it's nice to have the second person there to help you answer questions or show you little tips and tricks or just kind of the basics of what the job is, because everybody's got to learn each job at some point. You know, some of them are just more jobs that people tend to shy away from, but that's another good example, not just running trains, but doing some of the other jobs that various layout owners have on their layouts.
Do you guys think technology is improving this? And I'll give you two examples. The one we all know is the proto throttle. And William, you probably have the most experience with that. I have one. I know Ken has one. I think David, you have one. We're working on those. It makes the two-person crew fun, and, you know, you have this thing. But I was just came back from Springfield and had a long talk with the Soundtrex people and their Blue Nami and George and Nancy, where they're so kind. They had a switching contest, and it was a very simple switching contest, move a couple of cars. But what they did was made you use their Blue Nami, and so you had this iPad. And you had to do all the right sounds. You had to you push a button for the brakes and the coupler and the horn and the bell and, you know, to make it look air brakes. And if you had a two-person crew, you know, if you had your iPad with all these things, you could do that and bring to life, you know, switching this district or switching this yard by using these kind of sounds and buy into the story. Do you think technology plays into a point, William? I'll ask you that.
Well, I mean, I think there's the pros and cons. I'd fear, you know, some people might get distracted on the iPad. They'd be on YouTube, and the next thing you know, they're not paying attention at all. But the overall device can...
If only YouTube, yeah.
Well, that's true. the device itself, I always feel like the proto throttle feels like it matches the railroad world, where the tablet and phone, I mean, Tom, you're running in locomotives now that a lot of stuff is done on screens too. So it's not like that stuff doesn't exist, but you're still going to use a mechanical element to move the locomotive forward and backward. So marrying those two together, it's kind of, I think, a little bit of a fine dance. I feel like a personality comes in even more so just in the fact that maybe younger generations, I do see iPhones in their hands more often than older generations that like just the knob. That's that physical tangible, because that's what you're used to. I almost wonder, do you guys even see it? The Blue Nami, I think, is a good example. And the Proto Throttle is obviously one. But do you guys see collectively in even two-man crews, a guy with an iPhone versus, you know, checking his text messages? Is he getting distracted because he has a different device in his hand?
Last night, my new yard master did use his phone. You know, because I have one of those LNWI deals, and I always encourage people to use their phone if they have one, and if they've got the Y throttle. He was having a pretty good time. He never deviated from the job at hand, you know, so he wasn't checking messages or, you know, looking to see what phase of the moon we were in or anything like that. You know, he was pretty well disciplined. You know, I don't know that, you know, we could go down that road. It'd be a lot easier to use an iPhone than it would be to use an iPad, you know, just because of the bulk of the thing.
Well, Dave, let me ask you this. For the gentleman that was using it, or operators that have come to your railroad with an iPhone, when you do see that, to Tom's point, it does say bell. It does say horn. It does say lights. Because I know we have operators that they're running dark, no headlights on, no beacons, nothing's on, no sound is on. And they're like, well, I don't know which buttons do what. And it's like, well, you're looking at Digitrax throttle and you just have 9 keys. And it's like, whoa, it's F5. That'll turn on your ditch lights or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
Do you guys?
It's function 27.
Yeah. Well, now you can actually read it and tell what you're going to turn on. Do guys know to turn them on and off? Or are they using functions because they're using your Y throttle?
Yeah. I mean, we were last night, you know, the guy in the yard was pretty good about that, you know, when he could focus on that. Otherwise, he was pretty much just drilled into keeping up with the activity. But I always, if somebody does use it, I point out that the locomotives, if they didn't already realize it, have sound in them. And, you know, and I say, you know, don't keep the bell on all the time, but don't be afraid to blow for the crossings and that sort of thing. I try to encourage that if somebody's so equipped when they come over. And going forward, it's kind of, sometimes it's sad to see all the fancy stuff and none of it's really getting used correctly. We all see that happen, that for whatever reason, they get sidetracked and they forget that they can use all those functions just for their own entertainment, really.
Yeah, I wonder if this is kind of a generational thing. The kids, a younger person now that's coming out of role-playing games, is going to be more comfortable using all those buttons and getting into the role playing. Those of us that came from the DC era, where there weren't this, we didn't have all these options, we're accustomed to something else. Maybe part of the evolution of the hobby.
Sure.
I haven't used an iPhone to do any switching or anything like that with a train. I would assume that trying to spot cars and stuff, kind of sliding your finger on a little thing on a phone, would be more difficult than turning a knob. But I've never done it.
If you had a two-person crew and someone was telling you, you know, one car, half car, that'll do, take them back, you know. Yeah. I think if you're doing it all yourself, that's what I'm saying, like an iPad's cumbersome. But if somebody else is talking to you, hand signs, and screwing, uncoupling cars, you are now just the engineer. You're like, right, my job at work. You back, forward, and stop. Yeah, I know it's cumbersome to do by yourself. Then where do you put it down to do this? But if you had two people, that technology is now kind of fun.
And that person's always, they're hovering their thumb over the e-stop button, just to know they got to stop. But that little bit of lag, though, right? I think Ken's making a point about that slider. But if you're doing that, even as an individual, Tom, you probably even know, you anticipate to slow down as an engineer, even when they say that'll do. That guy might say that'll do at a certain time, knowing that Tom still has to mechanically actually stop the locomotive. So getting a feel for your throttle, whether it's a tablet or a proto throttle or any of that.
I don't know if you guys have ever noticed this, but if you're using the Y throttle app on a phone, and I've never used it on an iPad, but it, you know, it's got forward, idle, reverse. And if you hit idle when you're running forward or backwards, just hit that idle button in the middle and it like glides to a stop. And I mean, not a wheel screeching stop, but a pretty reasonable stop. And it makes a world of difference as opposed to fiddling around trying to get the slider to zero.
Oh,
and then you can pass zero.
Yeah.
But just hit idle try it if you don't, haven't already, you know, used it. You'll be surprised at how much more versatile just knowing that makes the deal work. And one more thing, last night, Neil was, you know, the guy that was using his phone, he brought over these neat little tabs, if you will. And I have my iPhones are all in cases. And this was a little thing that you could actually slip inside of the case for the iPhone. And it has a hook on the end of it, so you can put a lanyard on it. And the case itself, basically, I'm looking, I might have them in my pocket, but this is the thing, and I know it's hard to see it, and our audience can't see it, but this slips into the case that an iPhone or an Android phone is in, and there's a little ring on the end of it that pretty much sticks out where the power plug goes. You hook that onto your lanyard, all right? So once again, this is what the thing looks like.
And you almost think credit card with a loop on it. He's got a modified shape that would go inside your case. It would be with a little loop on top. It looks pretty slick.
So you don't have to put it down.
Right. So he ended up using a lanyard. Like in my case, I've got tons of Minrail lanyards hanging down there. And so he had his phone hanging from his neck. And once again, he didn't pull on the thing to try to choke himself or anything, but it worked perfectly. And it made the iPhone that much more versatile. And, you know, I don't think you could hang an iPad on one of these things, but if you were using a phone, and I forgot where he said he got these things, I'll find out though. You can take the technology and modify it a little bit, you know, and it makes it real comfortable. And there's a couple railroads that I've gone to where I use my iPhone as opposed to whatever throttle. And it really makes, they're fun to use once you get into that, really knowing what all the little buttons do on them.
Well, let me do the final thoughts here. I'm going to ask you everybody this question. We'll go around the horn. And tell me, which job would you pick? We're going to pair you up with someone. Do you want to be the engineer or the conductor, and why? And I'll start with you, Ken Zeska. Which job would you pick? And then a quick read.
First, take the conductor so that I could learn more. And then I'd take the engineer so that I could rail fan.
So you'd switch in a session or something?
Sure. I'd love to do that.
Ken B., what would you do?
Yeah, I was going to say that too. Like on my layout, when I schedule crews and stuff, usually people are doing more than one train. So you could swap out. You can be, you know, the engineer on one run and then switch jobs with the other guy and be the conductor on the other run. And then the biggest advantage of the two-man crew is when you accidentally drop the 40 cards on the floor, you got help picking them up and getting them back in the order that they're in your train. So so that's probably the biggest advantage.
You did that, not me. Yeah. Mr. Jordan, what would you choose?
Conductor, just to be able to organize and get things going. And besides that, I like to boss people around.
So. Yeah. That's a good reason. David?
I think I'm going to mess it up by say it depends on the railroad, because there's a couple I go to where I love being the engineer, you know, just because I've done the job many a time and I'm pretty comfortable with it. But there's one or two where I enjoy being the conductor, you know, so it's kind of a railroad specific thing. But I kind of lean toward engineer, quite honestly.
William?
I'd say, again, kind of like Dave and the fact that it's the people that are being paired up. If there is a paired job, a lot of times, whomever is there, they'll kind of look across the room and be like, hey, do you want to take that job? Be like, yeah, all right. I mean, I know a lot of times I operate with my dad, and he likes being the throttle jockey. And he goes, I don't want to do the think work. He goes, this particular railroad, it's like playing checkers and chess. He goes, you can play chess. I'll play checkers. That type of kind of back and forth, I enjoy it just based on the person you're with. So I fall towards conductor. But if somebody else says, hey, no, I want to do the conducting role, I have no problem with just then rolling back to becoming the engineer.
The Minnesota passive aggressive just takes over in all of us. Because I feel the same way Dave does. If it's a new layout or newer one to me and I haven't done the job and the guy I'm paired up with or woman I'm paired up with knows it, I'm like, okay, give me the throttle. I can be grog here as well as work. And I think if I knew the layout and if the other person, you know, wasn't comfortable, like, hey, you get to run the train, I'll do the, like William says, I'll do the think, you know, I'll try follow the order. So thank you, guys. I think we had a good chat. We talked about the purpose for the second person. I think like an extra operator is a great example. We talked about hand signs, something maybe we clinic on, learn those. Main line duties, not just switching, taking warrants, paperwork, talking to the dispatcher, dropping all the cards on the floor, whatever. And if you have the space for two people, our good friend Paul Bukowski talked about that. His term was butts and guts. So I think a floater position. I'm trying to remember who brought up that, but someone who knows all the jobs and could pair up with someone and help them if they get stuck. We all talked about which job and why. So thank you guys for the chat. With that, I think we'll all say goodnight.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, guys.
You've been listening to The Crossing Gate, the official podcast of the Twin Cities Division. You can find us on Facebook in our group, the Twin Cities Division of the NMRA. You can email us at tcdnmra@gmail.com. Thank you for listening, and don't forget to subscribe for future podcasts.
Well, one element I didn't chime in on, and just real briefly, was the it was John McKenzie had his son, Owen, who was 3 years old. And I'm not kidding. He came in and he had a throttle, and I was working a yard, and I handed him a throttle, and I says, "All right, you go back and forth." And he was going back and forth, and he was throwing the switches, and he was doing his thing. And I turned to John. I says, "This kid's three. I mean, he's more accurate than most of these adults that we work with."
Ouch.
He listened. He knew where to go.
We're still here, William.
But my point there is that as far as a crew, I mean, old to young, and the focus and the attention span, I'm amazed when a young kid like that can come into a role and stay focused and then actually be more, you know, vigilant and a little bit more accurate than even some of the adults.
That's a whole nother podcast.